Great to meet you. Great to be here for this program. We've been looking forward, as I mentioned, to this whole series of studies and lessons together. And I pray that each one will benefit all of us. And we begin this morning with a theme that will continue throughout the gospel meeting portion of this week, which is the idea of facing giants, overcoming those things that are great obstacles, great difficulties that we face in life. And as we're looking this morning, as you look at the schedule, you'll note that rather than looking at some of those specific things, which will be dealt with later in the week, today we're going to begin by looking at the actual physical picture, which gives us the spiritual illustrations and applications that we will use throughout this week. So if you would turn your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 17, we're going to note that there was a nation at war. And when we read these words of opening in this passage, we see something that's not new to Israel. This is not the first time they have engaged in war. It's certainly not the first time that they have dealt with these other people, the Philistines. We read about this nation coming against them a number of times after they had come into the land of promise. We'll remember all the way back to Eli when there was a great defeat in the land of Israel, when several of them were killed and Israel lost some prestige in the eyes not only of Philistia but those around them. But it was under the leadership of Samuel that a great defeat was had in the other direction. The Philistines, who once were victorious against Israel, were now defeated. In 1 Samuel 7, we read about his leading of the people in this war. And by chapter 14, we're reading about a king whose son came forth very valiantly in battle, who led part of the army of Israel, Jonathan, and defeated them once more at Michmash. And so we're familiar with this people from Philistia. We're familiar with these enemies of the nation of God. And then in chapter 17, we read that the Philistines had come to battle once more. They have come to a certain place, it tells us, the Valley of Elah. And if we look at this geographically, we know it's a place that has mountains on either side. In fact, one of the things in the text says that the Philistines were on one mountain while the army of Israel was on the other. And we know that in this valley, in this canyon, if you will, that you have about a mile wide area. So it's not just a valley that may appear small or some place that may appear tight, but rather a very large area. And we know because of what's given to us in this text that there's at least one stream that runs right down through the bottom of this valley. And we know about what takes place with these two nations. But it's one thing to look at victory. You know, Israel wanted to be victorious. They had seen defeat even at the hands of these people. But they had also been victorious against them. But in our study, it's one thing to note the victory that Israel gains. It's another thing altogether to note that there is a hero. You know, we enjoy being victorious. If you've got a favorite sports team, there's nothing better than watching them win, except for watching the one who stands out when he's called upon. The one who can deliver in that moment when things are crucial. When everything is on the line, he doesn't strike out or doesn't miss that last free throw. He comes through. And we appreciate the heroism of the athlete who can deliver. But when we talk about the army of Israel, these mighty men, valiant men, had been noted for some time. When Saul was king and would go into battle, no doubt as a king who was a great man in stature, a man who was notable as a warrior, who led the people and who fought with them, he did what any warrior king would do, and he began to gather other mighty fighters to him. Those men who were valiant, those men who would stand out in battle. By the end of chapter 14, we're reading that all the days of Saul were filled with sore battles, sore difficulties, a great problem between Israel and the Philistines. But we're also reading that at that point Saul began to gather every mighty man that he saw, every valiant man that could be had. He would bring them to himself, which is very critical to our study this morning, because what we read is that David became one of these men of Saul. David the shepherd, the youngest of his brothers, you remember, who was at home. The shepherd who was overseeing his father's flocks and was sent on an errand to deliver some things to his brothers. When David comes, we not only see about him coming to a battle at this point, but we see in the chapter preceding this that Saul had already called David unto himself. In fact, David was presented to Saul when he had an evil spirit upon him. When he was troubled, he wanted someone to come and play the harp. He wanted someone to soothe his soul. And so a person presented David, the idea of this young man. This man who was already, he says, mighty and valiant. And this man was also skilled with the harp. And so he comes to Saul and he plays and he soothes Saul to the point that Saul sees the great advantage of having this young man around. And so he sends to David's father, Jesse, and he requests of him to belong to Saul for a time, to be his servant, to make him his armor bearer. And you'll notice in the text he says, to come before me. Now that's something that stands out if you read the next chapter. Read about Goliath. Because the armor bearer, typically in people's minds, is someone who would carry the armor of the king. But that's not all they did. When Goliath came down into the valley, came forth to call out a man of Israel, his armor bearer carried a shield and went before him. And so David was in a very critical position. Not only a young man, a mighty man, someone who could serve Saul playing the harp, but a man who was so mighty and valiant that he was going to be the armor bearer and, in that sense, a personal protector of the king in battle. And so we see this man David as he enters the scene. A man with whom we are very familiar, and it's ironic that David becomes one of the mighty men of Saul. Probably the other most notable point in David's life that everyone reads about and knows and all the details. We understand what David did when he sinned with Bathsheba. But one of the points about that situation was not only that David committed adultery, not only that he tried to cover that sin and ended up sending one of his soldiers to his death, but if you read in 2 Samuel 23, the listing of David's mighty men, these men that he, like Saul, had brought unto him to be valiant warriors for the nation of Israel, the last verse of 2 Samuel 23 lists Uriah the Hittite as one of these mighty men. And so it was one of these chosen ones, a man who would be very similar to David himself, who was sent to his death because of David's sin. But David knew this position as a mighty man, as a great and valiant warrior, and here is where we begin with him as a man who would stand forth. First, let's take a look at Israel. As we're looking at this situation, we have a great setting here with not only the place of the battle being given to us, but also the people who are involved. We have noted already about the Philistines, but let's look at Israel for just a moment and see what kind of a people they were. We see on the one side the Philistines, and in fact, the very name or description of a Philistine came to be called of those who were brutish, those who were without God, those who were wicked people. They would refer to them as being Philistine in their character. And here we have on the other side, as David terms them, the armies of the living God. We have what should be the people of Jehovah, the people of God, who have been led in battle numerous times by the Lord, who have gone and been victorious, who have defeated great enemies. In fact, we remember reading some specific things about some battles that stand out in all of history. The walls of Jericho collapsing, not because of a great military might that Israel exhibited, but because they were faithful to God. They obeyed His words, and God brought them the victory. How about Gideon and his mighty army whittled all the way down to 300 men? Victorious in battle, not because of might, of arms, not because of great and valiant men, but because of God. And now we read of Israel, who is in a situation facing a great enemy. They have an opportunity. But rather than seeing an opportunity for victory, we see something very different from these people, and I want us to note the faithlessness of Israel. These people of God who had every reason to trust in their great leader, to trust in the divine leader who should have been not only shepherding, protecting them, but leading them to a victorious end. They should have striven to be valiant. They should have stepped forward. But instead, their faithlessness is what stands out. The fact that they do not step forward to meet this task. They have a notable foe. They have the Philistines that are there ready to fight, ready to go to battle, ready to attempt once more to defeat these people. Israel had seen defeat at their hand. Back in chapter 4, we read about them being beaten in battle, about 4,000 of them dying. And so they said, oh, we've figured this out. We know what the answer is. We need the Ark of God. We need to bring that magic box out and have it here in our presence. And when we have that here, then nobody can stand against us. Nobody surely could defeat us if we have the Ark of God in our presence. Not only were they defeated a second time, but the Ark was taken from them. When we read about their defeats, we should have read about a people who were ready to stand with God and trust in Him. When they trusted in self and trusted in the box that God had given them, they failed mightily. But now they have an opportunity to stand. And instead, we see them facing a foe and we see them having great fear. One man of the army of the Philistines came out before them. One man. Can you get this picture in your mind? God had overthrown cities. God had overthrown armies for them. One man came out before them. We read in verses 4 through 7 of chapter 17 and presented himself. That's a very simple phrase, isn't it? It says he was defying, by his own word, the armies of the living God. I defy you. As he presented himself, he cried out for him to send out a warrior. Send out someone to fight me. Oh, you can see the valiance in this man. He's ready to step out for his country, step out for his army, step out for his people. And he's not just any man, is he? He is Goliath of Gath. This man has a heritage. This man not only is a warrior, but as we see from our studies this week, this man is a giant. Approximately 9.5 feet tall. This man would have stood out in any crowd. We read about Saul being a great figure of a man, being a head taller than everyone else. But this man was almost 10 feet tall. He was a giant of a man, literally speaking. And he was a seasoned veteran of war. A man who had been doing this from the time he was young. And now he is a man to be feared, at least in the eyes of Israel. This man comes before them, calls out a challenge, defies the army of the living God, and all we see from the army of God, from Saul, this king who previously had trusted God, who previously had defeated others in battle, and Saul, this great figure of a man who should have been the first one out there to meet this giant, instead sits cowering. We see the nation of Israel who are dismayed, it says in the text, and greatly afraid. They are fearful of this man. They have God and they are afraid. They fear so greatly that not one person steps forward. Not one warrior. There's not one in all of the army who grabs his arms and marches out to meet this giant. Not one. Until David comes to deliver some things to his brothers. Not the little boy David sometimes that we hear people sing about or talk about, but already a valiant man, a mighty man, but a young, and according to the Bible, a young good-looking man. He shows up and he sees what's taking place. He looks and sees what's happening and the shame that's brought upon his people. And so we see a difference. We see a change. But initially, what we're reading about is a great warrior who stands before them. We read about the fear of the people of God. And so we read about a failure. When the opportunity was presented, when the time came for someone to step forward, what we see is Israel's failure. We see them holding back. We see them sitting, and as oftentimes fear will cause us to do, we see them do nothing. They just sit. They wait. They watch. Do you remember reading in the text it says, for 40 days, Goliath did this, presented himself and defied the armies of the living God. Taunted them, challenged them for 40 days. That's a long time. In fact, in earlier in Israel's history, we read that 40 days was a long enough time for them to give up on God, give up on Moses, and return to the idolatry that they had learned in a foreign land. 40 days. We're talking about a long period of time in which these people sat and did nothing. But as we read about Israel and their great failure, then we have to note David. David, this young man who comes and who sees the giant presenting himself, hears the challenge that is cast at Israel, and then David starts to talk. He starts to say some things that are just unacceptable. Things that people don't want to hear. Things that this army has been afraid to say themselves. Who is this Philistine? Who is he that he should defy the armies of the living God? Who is this man? You know what David recognized immediately? When David looked at the foe of Israel, when David looked out at their great enemy, he recognized the fact that there was only one man. One man stepping forward, putting the entire army of the Philistines on his shoulders and saying, if you defeat me, we'll become your servants. If you can beat me, then you win the whole battle. It's yours. David steps forward, and what we see in him is a great frustration. Because as David steps forward and begins to ask these questions, he's immediately told by the people, well, this man's a giant. This man is powerful. This man is a brutal and strong warrior. And if any man could defeat him, oh, what the king would do for that man. What would the king do for the Israelite who would step forward and defeat this giant? Not only would he give him position, not only would he give him wealth, says he would give his own daughter to be the wife of this warrior. This man would become the son-in-law of the king. You think about what this would mean to any person in any society. You get to basically become royalty. You get to step into position and power, into prestige. You're going to be honored. You're going to be held up. The king is going to make sure that everyone in Israel knows who you are if you will step out to meet this warrior. So why had nobody done it? That's David's question. Who is this man to think that he can taunt us, that he can challenge us because we belong to God? Who is he? And then David, in essence, is looking at his own people and saying, who are you? To let this man cast forth his challenge. To let this man defy you and thus defy God. Who are you to sit here and allow this to happen? Oh, it's an insult. And it's obviously taken that way when David steps forth and speaks these words. Verse 28 says, and Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. You've come to see what's going on. You've come to be a spectator. You've come to watch what the army of Israel is doing. Where's your responsibility, David? You should be back home with those few sheep. Remember those few sheep that were left in your hands? That's your area of responsibility. You get back home and leave us alone. But David didn't stop talking because of the anger of his brother. He didn't stop talking if anyone of Israel was trying to shut his mouth. In fact, he kept asking questions. He kept making these statements until finally it was reported back to Saul. And as we continue reading in verse 31, we see that Saul is interested. I imagine he would be. For 40 days, this great stature of a man, this king of Israel, this man who should have belonged to God himself, is sitting in the leading position of this army, and none of them are doing anything. None of them are stepping forward to face the challenge. The king is even willing to offer a great reward for the man who will step up, for the man who will step out to this giant. So far, nobody's taking it. So far, nobody's receiving this reward. Nobody's even attempting. It would be one thing if David showed up on the scene and there were a pile of Israelite bodies laying out there who were willing to step out into this fray and give their lives if that's what it took. You know, that's what we read in the Scriptures about the people of God who were valiant, the people who were ready to face the giant. With David, we see a great frustration, but immediately we see his faith stepping forth. When he comes to Saul, what does Saul say to this young man? He treats him much like we treat a young man, doesn't he? When a young man steps forward and says he's going to do something great, what do we typically do? You need to cool it a little bit. You're getting a little bit too much fire. Your body's writing checks that you can't handle catching. You're going to get out here and write these things out, and then you're going to be called upon to answer for them, and you better back up a little bit. Try to have a little bit of wisdom about you. When David steps forth, Saul sends for him. But when he comes to Saul, you can almost see disappointment. I was hoping that somebody great was going to come in here. I was hoping to see a warrior, a man of battle, somebody who would be notable and who could stand up before this giant. But it's a young man who's a shepherd. And when David comes, Saul tries to talk him out of it. You don't want to go out there. This is not the place for you. You're a young man. You're a youth. And this man's been a man of war from his youth. This man has been doing this for a long time. You're new at this. You don't need to step out there immediately. But David was insistent. And why was he insistent? Because of his faith. Because David had the faith to cause him to step forward. The faith to cause him to stand out. The faith to cause him to go meet the giant. This text is so important to us because David did what needed to be done. Not just because he came and saw and spoke, but because he did. He acted. Hebrews 11 is filled with illustrations of people who by faith did what God told them to do. We're not reading a passage that's full of people who claimed belief or whose faith was just simply stated, but rather their actions showed their faith. There was a performance. They stepped forward and did what God told them to do. And on this occasion, the faith of David shined forth, not just because of what he said to the king, but because of what he does, where he goes, the actions that come forth. He tells Saul why he's willing to go forth. Because he trusts God. It's one thing for people to talk about trust. It's another thing to put it in action. Trust is a very critical part of any relationship. When trust has been taken away, it provides great difficulties, great hurdles. Trust is all important when we deal with one another. Whether we're friends, husbands and wives, parents and children, we deal with trust on a daily basis. And who is more worthy of trust than God? Do you know throughout the years of our time in this world, we have let people down. I have failed people at times, and others have failed me. And you know, even though we may respect someone greatly, if we've got a good understanding of human beings and of our own lives, then when we hold someone up, we may elevate them a little bit. We may respect them a great deal. But we do so with the understanding that they are not perfect. That they can fail. That they can stumble. They can land flat on their face just like anyone else. But who is more trustworthy than God? Had God ever failed these people? Had He ever let them down? Had He ever not come through? everything that God had ever promised them, every blessing that God ever brought to them was done perfectly and completely. Not one thing left undone. And when David came into this situation, maybe it's because he came from another place. Maybe it's because he wasn't in their presence facing this on a regular basis, but he immediately saw the problem. The problem was they were looking at a giant instead of looking to God. They were looking at a man of great figure, of great stature, instead of looking to the Creator. When we see David come to this situation, he comes with great faith. He says, I've not failed before. When I kept my father's sheep, I faced a lion and a bear. When we read in this text about the tools of the trade that David had, I wouldn't want to be in that position. To face a lion and a bear with a rod, with a staff, with a sling. If I were going to face a lion or a bear, I would want the largest firearm available and two or three people in front of me. Not so I'd shoot them, but just buffer when the animal gets mad. You know what it is? But when David faced the lion and the bear, he said, I did so with trust. In fact, he says they came to take a lamb of the flock. Doesn't tell us which one he's talking about in particular, but either a lion or a bear, it really doesn't matter which one. He grabbed him by the beard and smote him and killed him. Now, I don't know about you, but that's impressive to me. And this young man says, I did this because I trusted in God. Because I thought God was going to deliver me. And guess what? He did. He delivered me from the paw of the lion. He delivered me from the paw of the bear. And then he looks to this giant that's standing out in front of them, who is defying the armies of the living God, presenting himself, and he says, this one is going to be just like him. This is going to be another one, just like the lion and the bear. I will be delivered from the hand of this Philistine. And so Saul tries to arm David. You read about the armament of Saul in verses 1 through, or not Saul, but of Goliath in verses 1 through 3. It talks about his great armor that he's wearing, how much weight it was. We'd see today approximately 125 to 150 pounds of armor that this giant of a man was wearing. It talks about his spear and the weight of the spearhead and then the shield that his armor bearer was taking in front of him. We read about the armament of a man who's already fearsome just in his figure, just in his stature. But then he's armed as a man of war. He is ready to fight. And Saul tells David, if you are going to go out to meet this man, then here, take my armor. David puts on the armor of Saul, but immediately takes it back off. And the only reason he gives in the text is, I have not proved it. This is not mine. I've never used this before. And so what does he do? When we read of him going to the stream and selecting the smooth stones, what we're reading about is a man who is dealing with familiarity. He goes and does what is usual to him, what is normal. He goes and he gets what he's used to working with. He gathers stones. And he comes out and the giant is so perplexed by this. He says, am I a dog that you come out here with stones and sticks? Am I a dog that you come out here with? Look at me. I am Goliath of Gath. Who do you think you are? And do you remember David's attitude? I am the servant of the Almighty God. Who do you think you are? It says that David put the stone in his sling, and when he slung it, it smote this Philistine in the head. And sunk in. And he falls to the ground. Can you imagine this great man of war in all his armor, all his preparation, everything that's ready, and a rock hits him in the head and the man falls to the ground. But that's not the utter end of Goliath. It says David had no sword with him. So he goes to Goliath, takes his own sword, and cuts off his head. What we see with the Philistines and the Israelites is a rout. It's not a battle. They just start running for their lives. And Israel comes up in pursuit. How brave they are now. Truly, how brave they are now. Because they have a leader. Because they have somebody who did what they were afraid to do. They had somebody who stepped up to the plate when the time was needed and delivered. This giant who had been defying them, who had been presenting himself, haunting them, challenging them, is now a headless body laying on the ground. Well, that would be a shot of courage to any army. And so they pursue the Philistines as they run. David ends up finally presenting this head to Saul, the man who should have taken it in the first place. David was ready to face a giant. David stands forth with his frustration at the army of Israel, at the king who won't go to battle. But his faith causes him to step forward. And so we see David in victory. We see David not only in victory, but in valiance. We see him as this mighty man, a warrior. And what's the difference? This week is named on it. We've seen the faithlessness of Israel, the faithfulness of David. And what was the difference? The difference was their focal point. To whom were they looking? What was their focus set upon? For the army of Israel, it was a giant, a fearsome man who stood before them that captured all of their attention. They could not spare a moment to stop looking at this fearful man or fearsome man and turn to look to God. When David entered the scene, it didn't matter that that man was 10 feet tall. It did not matter that he was a seasoned man of war. It did not matter that everybody thought David was going to lose. I've heard David all through the years being referred to as the underdog, the one who should have been defeated. He was never in that position. From the first moment that he saw what was taking place, it was not David against Goliath. It was God against Goliath. David was never the underdog, and he knew it. That's what he told King Saul. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about God. The great difference between David and the rest of Israel was trust. He had his eyes set on God. His focus was in the right place. Israel's improper view of the giant caused them to miss God completely. David's proper view of God caused him to keep the giant in the right perspective. He didn't have to fear. He did not have to be afraid. He simply had to trust and obey. Lord willing, we'll continue this series throughout the week. Thank you very much for your time, your attention, and thank you for having me here.